Hey everyone, this is Clay with Nanobot Rock, bringing you the best local and independent music from around the world. On this week's episode, we reminisce a lot about Steve Guttenberg. We also discuss Shark Week within the confines of the month of August, the science of beaver nuggets, ask what-if questions, and also talk about the drawbacks to kissing elk at a petting zoo. We also dive into the tracks Spiral by Phosphine, Play On by Photo Ops, Why Should I Wait by Psychic Temple, Bad Chemistry by Fake Shark, and How to Sleep with Your Eyes Open by Monograms. This is Nanobot Rock Mixtape. That was magical. What did you just do there?
Something I learned in high school and you went, wah, wah, wah.
I don't know if I can move.
This weird thing where I could shake my jaw.
Yeah, that's I can't do that. You're like one of those one of the aliens from Sesame Street. Burring.
I don't know. I guess it comes from growing up watching too much Jim Carrey and that dude from Police Academy.
Steve Guttenberg?
No, not the Goot. But where that let's go down that path for a little while here. What happened to the Goot?
I'm sure he got independently wealthy and decided he never had to work again. Didn't take long to get onto IMDb.
I feel like you were already there. The Goot. I'm afraid to Google the Goot.
He was born in 1958 in Brooklyn, New York.
What? Nobody was alive then.
He is doing TV. He was on the Goldbergs.
Probably a throwback Police Academy
episode. Dr. Catman.
Catman.
He was on the TV show Ballers.
Naturally.
So he's still working.
So take off Safe Search and Google the Goot and see what happens.
No, we're not doing that. He's got several things that are in post-production. One of them is The Adventures of Bunny Bravo.
I feel like you're going to click that and tell us all about what
The Adventures of Bunny Bravo is about a rabbit named Bravo.
It's very on the nose.
Who lives on Easter Island.
Okay. Is this a TV series, an animated, a movie? What are we looking at?
It's animated.
Oh.
Bravo never does anything right, and to make things worse, his little brother, Taquito, is the chosen one.
For what? Chosen for?
It doesn't say. Just chosen.
Who is the Goot? Is he Bunny Bravo?
He's a voice. It doesn't say which voice.
He's a voice.
Along with Catherine McNamara. Yep. As cat.
Oh.
Bobcat Goldthwait as Bullfrog.
Okay, wait a minute here. Now we're just like, let's make an animated series with just a bunch of 80s actors. So is Catherine the cat a cat or a bunny?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, here's what we need to do. This is your homework. We need to interview the Goot.
Let me write this.
You need to figure out. Yes. We need to interview Steve Guttenberg. And you need to make that happen. So reach out to his people, have his people call your people, and let's have an interview with the Goot.
Jason Mewes is going to be in it as Tango.
Is it a View Askew production? Because that would be fantastic.
I'm trying to think who it's directed by Daniel Lusco. I don't know as I know that name.
And then they'll be standing there. One of the bunnies will be staring at one of the heads in Easter Island. Another one will come up and say, oh, it's a statue. And he goes, a statue is the head. And then he beats him up. Right? Because it's a View Askew production.
There you go.
Sailboat is a schooner for those who are
Greg Sulkin will be the voice of Bravo.
See, I think that's a poor casting choice. I think the Goot should have been the lead there.
As a young rabbit, you just get the guy who's born in 1958?
Yeah. Steve Guttenberg could do anything. Anything.
Anything.
So anything. So let him be the voice of the young rabbit. I'm fine with that. And if you oppose that, you don't like art, and that's fine. Because that's the world we live in. We just jump to extremes.
You don't want the guy who played Chase Stein in The Runaways? Marvel's The Runaways?
No.
Okay.
Really, you know, Guttenberg can just do all the voices. He can do all the voices. He's that talented.
In this episode, Greg professes his love for everything that Steve Guttenberg has done or will do.
If you don't love Steve Guttenberg, then just hit stop. Like, we're done here. Just, you don't have to listen to the rest.
So they shouldn't
do it. Because you don't like art. You don't like good things, and that's fine.
They shouldn't do a remake of Three Men and a Baby.
Oh, I heard they were going to do that, but no. Because then the Ted Danson cardboard cutout wouldn't be in there, and there couldn't be an urban legend. So that's fine. And yes, it was a cardboard cutout. There is no ghost in Three Men and a Baby.
What?
Nanobot news at 9. Gutenberg and the cardboard cutout. You heard it here first.
I feel like you're just now trying to get into the Michael Winslow voices.
Probably. Sorry, I'll stop. So let's talk science for a second.
Okay.
Enough with the Gutenberg. A couple things that, one is a finding, a scientific finding that I wanted to share with everyone who's been listening to us for a while. Thanks to the generosity and the graces of a particular Texan, who's not from Texas, but lives in Texas, also known as Clay.
I'm waiting for the package, science on this one.
A package arrived at my doorstep, which was nothing more than the Bucky's Beaver Nuggets, which we've talked about at length, so go back and check that episode out. But we dove into them here in the Greg household, and there's two scientific findings with this. The first being that they are absolutely delicious, and if you don't get Bucky's Beaver Nuggets, then you're surely missing out. Find someone in Texas, just dial a random Texan, tell them you want them to ship you some Beaver Nuggets. Maybe Bucky's will ship them. I don't know. I don't work for Bucky's. So they're absolutely amazing. There's no denying that.
I feel like we'd have much better luck getting a spokesman from Bucky's to answer that question than we would getting Steve Gutenberg for an interview.
What if Steve Gutenberg is the spokesperson for Bucky's?
He's just everywhere. He's a true Renaissance man.
We'll have to ask him that when you line up the interview. The second scientific finding from all of that is that you can eat too many Bucky's Beaver Nuggets and feel absolutely terrible about yourself. I found that out very quickly.
Yeah. Well, the real science behind it is that they don't necessarily taste great when you first have them, but you continue to eat them and they continue to taste better. And then you continue to eat them and then you feel terrible. So I will back you up on that scientific finding.
That was a harsh reality to come to when I took too many Bucky's Beaver Nuggets and...
But you lived to tell the tale.
I did, after laying on the floor drinking copious amounts of water and trying to get fresh air while I crawled to an opening in a window or a doorway. So that's my scientific findings to share with you. The second is a scientific question that I'm going to pose to you, Clay.
Oh.
And it is music related. And if individuals or those listening followed us on Twitter, they would have already heard this question.
I don't follow us on Twitter, so now I'm curious.
Well, you're not helping here. You need to say that you do so that people do, and therefore we're... Yeah. Anyway, what if, and follow me here, Stacy's mom really did have it going on? Discuss.
Well, she would have to have it going on. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a song.
Would she? Or is it a perspective thing? What if Stacy's mom really didn't?
So you're saying that this guy's an unreliable narrator, kind of like Tyler Durden or that dude from, I was just about to say Hackers. No, Mr. Robot.
Hack the planet! Hack the planet! Exactly. It's an unreliable narration with no fact to back it. And, you know,
there wasn't really a Stacy's mom. It was just a rocking chair filled with pillows.
So he's that hard up, huh? Okay. Well, what if there really was no Stacy? I mean, these are questions that we will find out on Nanobot Rock Mixtape. We get to the bottom of it. We're like hard copy for questionable pop songs.
I thought you were going to do the other direction of the, what if Stacy's mom didn't really have it going on? What if Journey stopped believing?
Oh, that would be sad.
What if? I'm trying to think of another one.
T-Rex did not bang the gong.
Or Kiss did not rock and roll all night and party every day.
Well, they are getting up there in age, but I'd still think that they could hold their own. What if it wasn't just the two of them? That's a stretch. I don't know. I got nothing. What else we got?
Just the one of me.
Just the one of me. Crying in my tea. Just the one of me. Me and me. Will Smith crying into his tea.
Maybe he would have sang a song about just the two of us, me and my loose leaf tea.
Sola. That's just the one of me is Sola.
You almost made me spit my tea.
I don't know. That's really all I had.
Well, this has been another episode of Nanobot Rock.
As is typical with Greg, we just kind of go with random thoughts. They go down this strange path that really has no end.
And then I stare blankly at you, and then we move on to something else.
It abruptly ends in confusion.
Yeah.
Which I'm really good at doing.
We've built our friendship upon such things. Why change now?
I only have which is why I really have one friend.
Just the two of us.
Just the one of me.
Chatting on Skype.
Crying in my thoughts. So maybe my wandering thoughts are a spiral?
Ooh, look at you, Mr. Segway. Please, Mr. Segway was my father.
I'm just the Segway, dude. Mr. Segway was my dad.
Would you ever ride a Segway?
No, you know, wasn't it President Bush that fell off a Segway?
I don't know.
He lives in Texas. It's a very small state. Go ask him. He probably lives down the road, past the big oak tree and the rusty old pickup.
After I'm done with my interview with Steve Guttenberger.
Steven
Guttenberg.
Missed opportunity of restaurant franchise for the Goot. Welcome to Steve Guttenberger. Can I take your order?
The Guttenberger.
I will take the Guttenberger with a side of Police Academy fries.
And just a statue of President Bush on a Segway.
I'm imagining this, and that'll be glorious. Let's just do that. Yeah, they were supposed to, weren't they touted as like Segways you couldn't fall off of them, and then the great shoe dodger himself fell off of a Segway.
It sounds like something that would have happened. So spirals.
Spirals. Some would pronounce it spiral, is what I would argue. Spirale. Spiral.
Hang on, I'm being attacked.
For those who are not watching the video of this, because there is no video, it's only audio, Clay has a guest in the recording studio with him this morning.
It's a kitten wearing a baby onesie.
A kitten in a onesie, named after the 90s band, Kitten Onesie.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing them open up for Mott the Hoople.
All the young dudes carry the news.
All the young Guttenbergs.
All the young Guttenbergs carry the Guttenbergers. Our first track of the third part of August is a familiar face, but one we haven't seen in a while.
Hang on, I'm trying to make sure the cat isn't killing itself here.
Okay. My brain just kind of went one way and my mouth went the other, so that's okay.
Well, you did that with your jaw really well. You know it wasn't Steve Guttenberg who made all the sound effects in... Okay.
Welcome to Guttenberger. Can I take your order, please?
Yes, I'd like a Steve Guttenberger and a side of Police Academy fries. Yes, and a large Diet Coke, please.
Okay, well, what do you have to have the window?
Are you done yet?
Spiral.
Spirals. We are off to a great start.
Okay, so Spiral. We are the first track of the third part of August. Brings us back to a friendly, familiar face that we haven't seen in a while, but we've thought of quite frequently.
Familiar face, but not a familiar place, because I believe they have relocated.
There has been some changes to the group Phosphine. Phosphine, formerly of the San Francisco Bay Area, is a trio of Rachel Frankel, Matt Hemerick, and Kevin Kaw. And yes, familiar face, not a familiar place. Rachel and Matt have gotten married. Congratulations to Rachel and Matt. And they have relocated to the piney Pacific Northwest via Portland, Oregon. So Phosphine, two-thirds of Phosphine, now resides in the Rose City, home of the Portland Timbers, the greatest Major League Soccer team. I don't get many chances, so I had to put that in there somewhere. Take that, Sounders fans. Our first track is Spiral from Phosphine. Now, because we're talking about Phosphine, we're going to get into some optometry here.
Okay.
And Phosphine, a ring or spot of light produced by pressure on the eyeball, or direct stimulation of the visual system other than that by light. Remember, kids, do not touch your eyeballs, especially in a world of COVID.
I'm pretty sure that you told me there were only going to be two science facts in this episode. You've already used them up.
Well, fine. Then you know what? Just go listen to Spiral by Phosphine.
Thank you.
Clay, this is the first reintroduction to phosphine that we've had in quite a while. I know that you were very open to communication with the band when they had sent this album over to us. Anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, yes. And if by open communication, you mean they sent an email and then I said, thanks, continue to listen to the album and then not actually write them back.
No, let's, you said thanks to what? The Abyss? Because
I said it out loud.
Okay. So he threw the thanks into the...
Yeah, it was a thanks in non-electrical form.
There you go. And then what happened?
Then I continued to listen to the album. And then I think he sent an email to you because I didn't respond. And then sent a follow-up to you because neither of us responded. And now here we are.
I would like to point out I have responded to Phosphine.
Oh, good. Said,
I take it by these emails, Clay has not responded to you despite my many attempts to say, hey, Clay, send an email to Phosphine and say thank you. We have been listening to Phosphine, and Clay has been listening to a lot of Phosphine. There's so much about this third album, Lotus Eaters, that is... Well, Clay, what are your thoughts on Lotus Eaters?
Gosh, I guess I wasn't prepared to talk about the album.
Just from the gut, what do you feel about Lotus Eaters?
No, I know. From the gut is really just too simplistic, so I was trying to take it a better place. But maybe if I just talk, the words will come out, and we can actually get somewhere with this. Having listened to the debut, self-titled Phosphine, and then going into Breaker, and now going into Lotus Eaters, I mean, it's trite to say that the sound is continuing to evolve. I mean, this is one of our favorite tried and true dream pop shoegaze type band that is continuing to mature in their sound and create, broader strokes. And like this one to me feels a lot more, scaled back in terms of just like a lot less of that fuzzy, grungy type noise that, we heard on previous things, but it's a lot more thoughtful. And especially like listening to songs, we'll get into Spiral or Cocoon, that just are these really, what do I want to say here? Like really rhythmically scaled back and just one of those things where, less gets to be more, and, simplifying the track in terms of the beat and the structure, but then basically counterbalancing that with these really great transitions from the beginning to the end of the song.
So I guess because we're focused on the track Spiral here, and it was unfair for me to just throw the entire album at you considering we're talking about one track, but how does the track Spiral play out in the grand scheme of Lotus Eaters? If this were the Diplomat track of the album, if this was the flagship that you said, here, listen to this and then go in and listen to Lotus Eaters. What about this track? What about Spiral to you made this go, wow, this has to be the forefront of the third part of August, and we're definitely including this on the mixtape?
Well, some of it is what I kind of alluded to, which is just that there's beauty in the simplicity of it. And, because it's got a very straightforward drum beat and guitar riff that goes on a loop and just kind of creates that dreamy sound that you get out of this album. And Rachel Frankel's voice just kind of in that lower register with kind of that almost seems restrained at times in its delivery, but still is just kind of laying out that poetry. It everything just glides along in such a low key way that it's a really great track that represents how meditative this album can be and how you can just get lost in it.
Touch on Rachel's vocals here, because you had brought that up in that lower register something interesting happens with Spiral to me, that her vocals dance among this shroud of almost continuous movement, almost, if you will, maybe like a fog. And her voice comes across almost slightly out of focus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's intentional, obviously, kind of like this sonic ghosting that's happening in this colorful haze that is the instruments that build on Spiral, and the shoegaze drifting sounds of Spiral really blends that 90s dream pop, those bright sounds, with a very present execution, really, that warms kind of those reminiscent parts of your audio triggers and gives us something to cling onto in the now. And I, for one, didn't know that Phosphine was working on the new album. They are, as you pointed out, one of our favorite shoegaze, dream pop kind of drifting sounds that we've discovered over the years. And I somehow just missed the fact that they were working on this. So it was a pleasant surprise to get this turned into us. But then as I listen to this, I want to dive more and more and more into it. And we're limited with the tracks on the third album, but there's so much to Phosphine that just, it almost feels like an escape. And it feels so releasing at the same time, that they're doing something that I can't quite put my finger on, but I want more of. And Spiral is a huge piece of that. And this is a track that in and of itself I could listen to on repeat, just because of the way that it plays out, the way that it builds and spins in itself. It's never too jarring or rough. I don't want to say it's warm and inviting, like, hey, sit down and listen to, but it's an escape. It's like walking into a mist that's somehow tapping into some inner need and thought and experiencing it and finding a little bit of yourself in it as well, to me. And it sounds really weird, but when you listen to Spiral, I think that may come across. Am I losing my mind here, Clay, or am I?
You are not losing your mind.
Oh, thank God.
I get that all that foggy, misty goodness, and yeah, you're not losing your mind or going crazy. Like, there is a fog and a mist that comes to this, but the drumming on the track just like kind of keeps like sets like mile markers so that you don't get lost, and you know there's something that just kind of tethers you to all of it. And then just the way that they did a great job with the transition, because you're kind of going along in one song, and then it kind of breaks into this kind of like little subdued guitar, and then just completely shifts directions. But it, like you said, it doesn't feel jarring as they get into this part of the song. That's like the bridge, the vocals shift into the, what is she saying it? Forever northbound piece. And then like, we're living off dollars and cents, and like basically just kind of puts that on repeat. Like, it almost becomes an entirely new song, but it just keeps enough of the core that you kind of, like you said, you don't feel like you just got a left hook.
And it emits such an honesty. And maybe it is the transition to Portland from San Francisco and the newly married and the whole transition and climbing up the spiral is another line that's sung in the song, which is, that stuck out to me, because normally when you think about the spiral, you think about going down the mm-hmm. spiral and spiraling out or whatever it may be, but it's climbing up the spiral, which was a fascinating perspective on that. And that's probably what Spiral does, is it takes those sensibilities and the assumptions that we all have, but it shifts them ever so slightly in a way that keeps you trying to grab that almost wraith-like presence of the vocals that's moving in and out of this mist, this fog, and you try to grab it, and just when you think you have it, you don't, and it plays on your assumptions like that, and it's very well executed all around.
Totally agree. And again, you're not crazy. I feel like I'm going to have to say that a lot. But anyway, enough about that. Lotus Eaters is out now. Go check out the album from Phosphine and give Spiral a listen.
Clay.
Greg.
Road Trip.
Absolutely.
This next track is...
I'll bring the beaver nuggets. Trip.
Yeah. We'll get about 20 miles until we pull over and throw up because we've downed a whole one without drinking any water. Los Angeles-based singer-songer. Let's try that again.
Yeah. No, that totally has to be what the... Let's just be honest. Stop calling yourselves singer-songwriters. Just start calling yourselves singer-songers.
Los Angeles-based singer-songwriter Terry Price, under the name Photo Ops, has achieved what many men try to achieve, and that is...
Release an album?
Exactly. No, the road trip song that the moment you hit play makes you feel like the wheels need to be on the road. No, that's not right, because wheels are should always be on the road. Keep the wheels on the road.
Not if you're not doing it right.
On two wheels.
If you're not catching air, you're not having fun.
Just remember Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Star Wars theme. Da, 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 da. Anyway.
That sounds like Superman.
It was. Shh. Nobody's keeping track. I would like to reiterate, Clay has mentioned that I am not crazy. Anyway, album Pure at Heart out September 18th on Western Vinyl. Terry Price, Photo Ops. The track is Play On. Listen to this real quick, the intro, and you will feel the road trip right away.
The video does a really good job of kind of making having that vibe as well, because it's a shot with, you know, all these interstitial cuts of, you know, driving in the west and along the Pacific Coast Highway. I have to imagine it's the PCH. And then, you know, then also shots of him singing in the rearview mirror. And it's just kind of cool the way that it's put together. But yeah, Terry Price or Photo Ops said that the whole album Pure at Heart was kind of inspired by driving across those western states. But he said in the song Play On that it was really supposed to have that open road feel. And listening to Bob Dylan's Sirius XM show Theme Time Radio Hour, Price said, quote, "I was learning that what made a lot of older music magical was the performers having to work with limitations. So you have to rely on human performance and the energy you could conjure in real time in the moment to communicate your idea."
Songers
conjure songs.
Songers conjure. I'm glad you pointed that out, the whole Bob Dylan Sirius XM show Theme Time Radio Hour while driving through the Southwest, because it shows that shuffling snare that is the intro on this track. And I just, before I even knew that that's kind of what inspired this whole album, I was just drawn to this. It's that sensibility that Jackson Browne achieved when he sang looking out at the road rushing under my wheels. Like there's this longing for these road trips and getting out there and hitting the gas and just going. And we probably need that now more than ever. So, you know, a day before my birthday, this album's going to come out. So happy birthday to me. I'm going to consider this my present. But the whole track of Play On, I love virtually everything about this song. I tried so hard to try and find a flaw, if only to convince myself that this wasn't quite at the level that I had in my own mind. And from that plucking guitar that dances above the deeper strums and the rhythms that are happening in the background, to the airy warmth of Price's vocals, just everything about this is that it's not a hot summertime road trip. It's just everything. It just falls in line. It's comfortable. It's just the right temperature out. The sun is out enough, but there's some clouds in the sky. The scenery is perfect. The road is smooth. There's no traffic. this is the go song. Like, I am going to add this song to my playlist for road trips because it's just, it comes together so perfectly, I guess, for lack of any better term, that, and I'm not just completely losing my mind on this going, oh my God, listen to this track and trying to shove it down your throat. It's just really listen to this and listen to the intricacies, the way that those, as I mentioned, those deeper strums, those rhythms play out underneath while that plucking guitar is coming through. And then there's these subtle, heavier strums that come in from time to time. And then the way that the vocals hit, it bleeds a need to be on the open road, experiencing that past and present all at once. And Photo Ops has achieved that so well with this track. Don't wait.
Makes it really interesting is how simply he went about it. He said that he and multi-instrumentalist Patrick Dampfier turned Price's 600 square foot apartment into a sound studio. They like nailed packing blankets to the wall, and they basically just tried to have this like stripped down, simplified sound, you know, like basically not having all these production bells and whistles and fancy things to, you know, really rely on, and just having to really simplify it. So my question to you is, do you think that he achieved what he set out to create this kind of like timeless track by simplifying things? And is this a direction that more musicians should think to go in the future?
Well, there's a lot to that question. The 600 square foot studio apartment is being generous, because I don't think it was exactly 600, which makes you think, oh my God. But when I
round up,
when I learned of that, it reminded me of a story of really early days of the Eagles when Glenn Frey was living in a house. I believe it was Glenn Frey, was living in a house with Jackson Browne, and they were just like, they had nothing, sleeping on couches. There was nothing on the walls kind of thing. And Jackson Browne is down in the basement, and he's sitting at a piano, and he's trying to put this song together. And it's how Glenn Frey learned to construct a song and how to put a song together. And the simplicity of those days, kind of like the before Geffen was Geffen and Jackson Browne was Jackson Browne, those days of just artists coming together with stripping everything down, arguably because they didn't have the means to go into some huge studio and make it happen. But you get these songs of, I guess, for lack of a better term, that bleed this sense of America in such a way that it taps into this unseen heartbeat that was the West of America. It's those long stretches of road through the desert. It's those warm drives on the PCH. It's these, you know, these drives through the forests of Washington and Oregon, the whole West Coast. Just, it beats with this soul that ever so often an artist is able to capture. And I think that they can really only capture that when they simplify things, when they strip it down and don't go too complex. And I think that Photo Ops nailed that. And I think that they were able to achieve that because they stripped it down and went so simplistic. So to answer your question of if more artists need to go that route, if they feel like they can't achieve that sound that they're trying to get, if they can't get their honesty laid down in the way that they're trying to make it honest, simpler is better. And start there and just like strip it bare. Go down to what you can, nail those packing blankets to the wall, you know, go to the basement and teach yourself how to recreate your song on just the piano with nothing else in the basement type thing. That's how you do it, because that's where you're going to feel that heartbeat of the West and that heartbeat of Americana, like Photo Ops did with Play On, more than you bargained for, huh, Clay? There you go.
Yeah. I've got nothing to add there. So I'm just going to say when Pure at Heart comes out on September 18th, go check it out. Maybe get a copy for Greg for his birthday and go enjoy some great music from Photo Ops, a great American singer-songer.
This next track, the third track of the third part of August's mixtape.
Would you say we went from stripped down to ambitious?
I don't think ambitious is the word that can properly convey what it is that happened here.
Okay.
This was blah. This was a, like, words, Greg, use them. We have a language, use it. The next track that we are going to be talking about here is something that to wrap your head around this and be able to properly break this down and convey this makes you probably a better man than I, because there is so much going on here for not only the track, but to what will be the record, which will be this huge collaboration of a monumental, don't say the word. Put togetherness.
Well, while Greg thinks of another word for constructed, we should probably mention that this is Psychic Temple, which is the project of Chris Schlarb. He has a new album coming out on September 25th called Houses of the Holy. It is a double album, but it is a double album with two sides each. So there are four sides, and on each of the four sides, he is working with somebody different on each one. So like side A is the aforementioned Psychic Temple with Cherry Glazer, and it's songs of love, tenderness, madness, suicide. Whereas side B is the Chicago Underground Trios, and it's songs of family, music, poverty, dreams. And then on the third side, you have, actually, I'll jump to this side D, whichever you want to call it, real quick. Which I don't know why I'm jumping to this one, considering I'm not sure how to pronounce the poet Zolo Lan Zinso. It's songs of spirit, triumph, unity, reflection. But then going back to side C, Psychic Temple joins Dream Syndicate for songs of rebellion, isolation, hope, escape. And the reason I'm doing this is because of all the exclamation points. But this is his partnership on the song that we're covering is Why Should I Wait?, which covers his partnership with Dream Syndicate, which just comes across with this great just rock and roll feel to it.
Mention this because I found this to be very entertaining and very interesting, but then I never knew that it would actually convey to the difficulties I had when trying to put my thoughts together for this particular track. We are talking about Why Should I Wait by Psychic Temple featuring the Dream Syndicate. Chris Schlar believes that, quote, there is no double album that would not be improved by removing the worst songs and making it a single album, to which Chris Schlar decided to make a double album to challenge himself to prove that this may not be the case. Now, why should I wait? There, aside from just saying, take this, listen to this, you'll understand why, this is a hell of a flagship to get out there and to show that this double album is very much onto something that I foresee being very successful and having a huge draw. This particular song, Why Should I Wait, feels incredibly jam band to me in so many ways, all while being incredibly concise. It really is like an electronic version of a Davis-esque movement. Kind of you get Miles Davis in there with a bunch of talented musicians. They put together this piece, and somehow, like in the first take, it clicks and it becomes kind of blue sort of situation where, whoa, it's this profound work of art. And I'm not saying Why Should I Wait is going to be this huge movement that swings an entire sound and the birth of something new necessarily, but what it is that's these minds coming together and executing in a way that feels incredibly organic, incredibly jam band, but it's so tight that it's so talented to me, and it pieces together so well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, yeah, it's got that jam band feel, but like, let's be honest, most jam band songs, you know, go on for 72 years, but their ability to distill this down into a 3-minute track just is so monumental.
Absolutely.
And Schlarb also, you know, talked about the partnership with the Dream Syndicate, and he said that they're one of the great rock bands of our time. Plugging myself into their circuitry was an otherworldly experience and a privilege that I don't take for granted. The more I listen back to what we recorded, the more I learn. And so this just, they just really tapped into something here, which is just really unique. And you may not get all of that, you know, the first couple times listening through this, because, you know, like, you may focus on just kind of that choppy driving, you know, guitar chunky riff that's going on, but it's just got all the swoops to it. And then the minute that it just gets into like a very, very quick guitar solo, like, there's just, they pack a ton into this 3 minutes.
That goes a long way as explaining that it is only 3 minutes, because it is. It, when I first listened to it, I thought, okay, this is a lot to take in. I'm like, okay, when it ended, it's over. Cool. And then next thing I know, I found myself going back to the beginning. And then it ended again. And I'm like, oh, cool. All right. That got better. And then next thing I know, I'm hitting play again and I'm back at the beginning. And it's like, I'm in this, for lack of a better term, spiral of just this track, which makes it really difficult when we put it into a mixtape, because we're like, listen to everything. But when you hit this track, it's kind of, I'm going to listen to this again. And wait, one more time. Okay, you know what? I should probably hit play one more time. It's not going to hurt anybody if I hit play one more time, because it is only 3 minutes. And I almost want it to be that jam band 72-year-long track. Like, give me more, which makes me super excited for Houses of the Holy, because all the four sides I anticipate to be vastly different, but aligned with a similar vision, which it's out on Joyful Noise. So
I think
September 25th.
And I think, I can't remember the track off the top of my head. There is a track that is out with the Chicago Underground Trio that is worth checking out as well, because, yeah, it's a completely different direction. And if you're really latching on to what's done in Why Should I Wait, then you're going to feel something completely different with this other track. But overall, just watching what Psychic Temple builds has been really kind of a joy to unfold.
Absolutely. It's a tease to get this particular song for what is not only going to be a big album, and it would be a big undertaking, but probably one you're going to want to get your hands on and go back to the beginning on, and go back to the beginning on.
Yep.
And go back to the beginning on.
And check out all four of those very different sides.
Very much so. When it comes out September 25th on Joyful Noise Recordings, Psychic Temple's Houses of the Holy. In the meantime, check out Why Should I Wait? Psychic Temple featuring The Dream Syndicate. August is world renowned for being Shark Week, Clay, isn't it?
It is, but you basically just made a month a week.
Well, right. I mean, what else is there to look forward to in August? Well, right, but do you want to look forward to?
Okay, words, Greg, words. August is not Shark Week. August contains Shark Week in one of its weeks.
August is famous for Shark Week. Will Smith is famous for Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It doesn't mean that here's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Play back the tape.
We can't go back. That's the point, Clay. So we're looking forward. We're visionaries here. Shark Week within the month of August.
Thank you.
Mr. Semantics, you better? You happy
Thank
now?
You.
God. I'm done with this crap.
No,
Shark
you're not.
Week exists within August. We are in August, so it only makes sense that we talk about our finned friends in the ocean. Clay, take it away. What are your thoughts on Jaws?
Is this where I say that I've never actually seen Jaws?
For those who can't see me, obviously, I'm giving him a very blank stare.
You are without speech.
You've never seen Jaws?
Not the whole way through.
You've been on discount lobster boats in the waters where Jaws was made famous. And
there were no shark. Okay.
You don't know. Did you see him? Were you swimming with him? I don't know. You were chumming the waters.
Yeah. By the self, it scares away the alligators. There aren't any alligators around here. Exactly. That's how you know it's working.
We are, of course, talking about not real sharks, sadly, because I could do a whole dissertation on that. I love sharks. I am a huge fan of sharks. We're talking about fake shark. Clay, since you haven't seen Jaws, why don't you just go ahead and tell everybody about fake shark and bad chemistry?
Well, the thing I do know about Jaws is that he was a fake shark. I mean, it was a model that Spielberg created, right? That looked like a shark?
Named Bruce, yes. Which is why the Finding Nemo, the great white's name is Bruce. It's a homage to the shark name from Jaws. There you go. Fish are friends, not food.
Why was he Australian?
Because that's where Finding Nemo took place. You have three kids. You should know the answer to this.
I've gone from telling you that you're not crazy to driving you crazy. This has been a great episode.
Of all the things I've lost, I miss my mind the most.
Crazy? I was crazy once. They put me in a room. It was dark. It
had
worms.
Tickled.
It drove me crazy. Crazy?
Nope. Okay, I will do this. Fake Shark, Bad Chemistry is the next track on August Mixtape. I'm going to just dive into the intro here because that intro is awesome, but I'm going to also preface it with the unshakable Muse Resistance vibe. Okay, that wasn't fair for me to just drop the unshakable Muse vibe here. However, I cannot get past this feeling that Fake Shark summoned their best Matthew Bellamy for this one. And it's clinging to me, but bear with us here because there's a lot more to this than simply, go back and listen to why Muse, what do you do when Radiohead, it doesn't be Radiohead, you be Radiohead. What happens when Muse isn't Muse, you be Muse. That's not what we're getting at. What I'm getting at here is Kiwi, Louis Wu, Tony Dallas, Alex Glassford, Jake Fox, the collective Fake Shark. When you get past that association, this is a guilty pleasure song. It is the kind of song that makes you feel cool. Like Baby Driver strutting down the sidewalk in headphones while the world is disappearing around him kind of moment cool. Like, I can't help but feel like just total BA while having headphones on. And nobody else necessarily knows what I'm talking about, but yeah. Bad chemistry.
BA?
Badass. What if we have young listeners who are trying to figure out where Bruce was in Finding Nemo, but now we had to go throw a badass into it all. So there goes our family friendly. Fun.
Yep. Well, now they have a new favorite movie in Jaws. So you're helping the youth of America grow up quickly.
It's a fine hat, Harry. What are your thoughts on bad chemistry, Clay? I agree.
So just backing up real quick, the album House of Mirrors came out in July. And Bad Chemistry is actually came out as a single back in March, but it felt like a song that was worth revisiting, 5 to 6 months later, depending on when this actually comes out, that it's got this great purpose about it with, and it's like a manic energy. And then like you mentioned with that kind of that Muse wop wop in the beginning, like it's kind of got that dirty sound that Muse was going for within Uprising, but they're also making it something of their own. And the song is just, has got such this sneering posture about it that it just exudes that energy that you would want from, like an alt electric dance track.
The hooks in Bad Chemistry sink into you so smoothly, it's almost imperceptible. Imperceptible. Inconceivable.
Imperceptible in their singer-songerness.
They sink into you so smoothly that it instantly you become drawn to the vibes, and there's this swagger and strut that comes with that. You feel it from the very beginning in that intro, and that ba-boom da doom da doom da doom drive that it's got throughout the track. And then this, just kind of this nonchalance, but the vocals in this come across so cool, but like they know they're cool, so it's cool, because there's a lot of cool to this, and it is just, it makes you feel cool. So Bad Chemistry is cool, and it makes you feel cool. So if you want to feel cool, kids, take some bad... That feels like a drug announcement, and I'm just not going to go there. So we're not condoning that. So
if you want to feel cool and not take things, then go listen to... And you don't want to ingest Bad Chemistry, because that's wrong. Drugs are bad. Then go listen to Bad Chemistry. And see how easy that was?
There you go. Drugs are bad. Fake Sharks and Bad Chemistry are good. Rounding out August's mixtape, what is Nuke Wave?
I don't know. That one really confused me. What is it? Do I need to look it up?
Go ahead and look it up. But Brooklyn, New York's Nuke Wave Sound Monograms, we are talking about how to sleep with your eyes open.
Reddit. This could go bad. What is Nuke Wave? Nuke Wave expressions. I'm beginning to think they made this up. It's new wave with a post-apocalyptic, like the world's just been nuked feel to it.
So in the aftermath and fallout of the apocalypse, new wave sounds will be known as Nuke Wave, per Clay.
The bio for
Monograms reads simply, quote, a non-influencer's mosaic guide to manic repression.
Cool.
Only a Ceiling Can Stay Inside Forever, the 14-track LP, was out July 31st on Paper Cup Music from Monograms. Again, the Brooklyn, New York-based Nuke Wave sound. This How to Sleep With Your Eyes Open is this drifting electronic fuzz assembling a dance of distorted ambiance and distant vocals that mold into this full electro sound that is both chaotic and oddly welcoming at the same time. It feels very approachable, but spinning with chaos in execution.
Interesting angle to take on it. I guess I never thought of the word approachable for this, but I mean, I'm a little curious on that one. Like what about this? Like, did you feel was approachable? Like, I'm not trying to say like this is like music that you can't touch with a 10-foot pole, but, or, you know, only something that the uncool nuke wave kids, you know, listen to. Maybe it's the new wave in the Duke Nukem game. I don't know. I'm still hung up on the term.
Well, for me, I guess the approachability, the welcoming sentiment that I got out of this was, it feels slightly retro in some ways, particularly with the synth, the way that it's put together. It's vocally a moving target in a dark room with these blips of light. So imagine, if you will, like a club scene filled with people. All of them have their backs to you, but you're trying to make eye contact with this one person that's moving around in these flashing lights in the darkness, and you keep seeing their face, and you're drawn to it. You're trying to get that, and it's this draw. It's this wrapping its arms around you. Maybe a fascination is the approachability, I guess, if they can be one and the same in an odd way, is kind of the way that I was pulled into How to Sleep With Your Eyes Open. It is that. It's you can't see the faces of everybody else in the club. It's dark. The lights are flashing to the beat. But every once in a while, through the maze of bodies, you see this one person staring right back at you. So you move that direction and the lights go out and the lights come back on and they're over here. So you move over there and welcome to the mind of Greg. Well, again, I'm not crazy.
thanks for that little glimpse into your psyche. But yeah, I'm actually not going to be able to unsee that anytime I listen to this track now. But yeah, it's got a lot of that retro industrial feel to it, with just the pacing of it and the way that everything is kind of, basically, for the lack of a better word, like thrown together on a synth, and just kind of these, you know, abrupt changes and jagged edges. But it doesn't feel as jagged and rough as a lot of that, you know, old, you know, that 90s industrial feel. It still has all the same sensibilities, but definitely feels a lot more softer in a way.
Would you say welcoming or approachable?
I would say you could approach this. You could approach it. You could scratch it under its chin, maybe give it some kibble, but you're not going to take it home with you.
It's
music's elk at a petting zoo.
Music's elk at a petting zoo. Go listen to Monogram's How to Sleep with Your Eyes Open. Find out why you'd want to pet an elk at a petting zoo. Come on.
They got those soft, they got the hair under their chin that you can just scratch, and then you give them kibble.
Are you in the habit of petting a lot of elk?
And then you get the lips on your mouth, and you just got that weird feeling that
you got the lips on your mouth. Why do you have your mouth to an elk's mouth?
Their lips.
Is this a main thing? I'm trying to figure.
Oh man, no, they got their lips on your hand. That's what I meant, not mouth. I didn't want to say goat, because goats you can take home with you. There are a lot of people who have pet goats, but you're not going to have a pet elk.
A pelk. So you cannot have pelk. But for those who are going to go kiss elk at a petting zoo, especially in a time of COVID, it's just not advised. Just thank you for listening and spending time with us this week. And thank you for sharing Nanobot Rock, and for everybody who has discovered new music through here and who shared music with us. So keep listening to local and independent music. Keep supporting local and independent music. And we will see you next week.
Bye now.
Not going to do your give a like, give a share thing?
Oh, that thing. Yeah, I can do that.
If you want to, you don't have to. This thing just kind of out the window anyway.
Elk in a petting zoo. I'm out. As always, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're at Nanobot Rock. Give us a like. Give us a comment. Share music with us. We love receiving new music and sharing great new music with people. So this gives us an opportunity to do that. So as always, share and share alike.
Until next time.
Elk in a petting zoo. I'm out.